Right. Welcome. Thank you for taking your time joining us here this late Thursday afternoon, final session for today, just before the Ask the Experts session in the other hall there. Don't remember which hall, but it's the big one. I'm Johan. This is Michael. We used to be, I guess we're still partner in crimes, but we used to work for the same company many years, and now, of course, we are competitors. And the irony of everything is that we probably do more work together now than we used to do when we were at the same company.
Yeah, because at that time, just one boss could control us both. Now we have two, and they don't communicate, so that's pretty nice.
So either I can hire Michael for work, and he can hire me for work, and we can do what we do best, and that is traveling this blue planet of ours, helping companies implement deployment solutions. And in this session today, we're going to cover end-to-end how you set up and customize a complete deployment solution using nothing but free tools. So focus in on MDT 2013 and the plumbing required underneath. Shall we switch over to number five?
Number five coming up, sir. There you go.
We just love questions, and we have a laptop over here with Twitter running. So if you have any questions throughout the session, feel free to tag them there, and I will be able to see them, and we can answer them. It's also totally fine to just ask the question right out in the room as well. In the very event we don't have time to answer all questions that comes in through the feed, we will make sure to answer them later on this afternoon. But we are quite good in responding to questions during sessions. And good questions might come with a reward. Might. Have to be insanely good, though, but they might be rewarded.
Yeah. And you need to be in the room.
Yeah. So what we are going to do here is we got this spec from our manager. This is what we need to have in our organization. So we have a fictive company named ViaMonstra. It actually has a domain as well, so if you go to ViaMonstra.com, you can read some about this company. It's our Contoso. We use it for our lab and demo environment and whatnot. And of course, all the thing that we are demoing here today is available for download from our blogs as well, all the scripts and all the sample files that we are showing you. So either Deployment Bunny, which is Michael's blog, or Deployment Research, which is mine. But this is what we're going to do. We're going to set up a deployment solution that is capable of deploying all three main scenarios: bare metal, refresh, and replace. But not only that, add support for hardware, add support for pre-staging devices, customizing the MDT wizard. How about sending an email when the deployment is done to our manager or to your manager? And of course, connect that with remote access to the machines during deployment and monitoring and logging and a bit of troubleshooting. So all in all, end-to-end.
Number?
Number PowerPoint.
Number PowerPoint, there you go.
Yeah. So what we are using in the what?
Someone changed that. Take the next one. Yes, thank you.
The Ask the Experts is after this session. It's not now.
Just checking.
Yeah. The plumbing that we use is MDT 2013 Light Touch, the standalone solution together with Windows Deployment Services. And please note here that Windows Deployment Services in no means is a deployment solution. It's not. It's just plumbing to make deployment possible. The same with ADK. It's a requirement for deployment, but it's not the solution. MDT is the glue, is the solution that ties those together. I mean, you can deploy an image through WDS, sure, but it doesn't do updates, it doesn't do drivers, it doesn't do applications. Well, you can do drivers, but it's limited. And it doesn't do settings. So by having them together, you really have a fully blown deployment solution that is really, really good.
Running just Windows Deployment Services is pretty much like having an engine. And then you say, well, it's kind of a car. We just need to add a few items around it, and then it's a car.
You mean like chassis and wheels and a steering wheel and
yeah, all those
dashboard.
Tiny things you also need to have. otherwise it doesn't work. So.
And this solution does support all the three main scenarios that we want to cover in deployments, but it has one really important piece, and that's the rules engine. The rules engine is basically the ability to feed dynamic settings into a deployment. For example, generate a computer name, dynamically detect if it's a laptop or desktop and put it into the correct OU in Active Directory, assign lists of applications. Say that you have three departments. Mm-hmm. You want them to have different lists of apps being deployed. Then you can have three separate lists, and you can just assign a list at deployment time. Very same sequence, but you can, do that.
So what we see when we go to a customer is that some of them built a solution based on Windows Deployment Services, and they say, well, it's kind of working. How does it work? Well, you know, fire up the machine, we have 12, we deploy the image, okay, and then it's done. No, then I need to manually run Windows Update, and I install the applications, and then I configure it, and then I'm done. So it takes, what, 15 to 20 minutes to download the image? Yeah, and then it takes the rest of the day? Yeah. You don't really have a solution. You have a small part of a solution. In my experience, the less thing you need to do manually, the less typing and inputting and manual stuff you need to do, the better quality the machine will have when it's in production for the next couple of years.
So the cool thing about MDT is it's not only free, it's also quite easy to set up. So
it's my turn, right?
Yeah.
I'm number one, right?
You're number one.
I'm number one. Okay. So yes, it's pretty easy to set up. You need to install ADK, which is a download, next, finish. And then you need to install MDT 2013, which is a next, finish. There's no questions that you need to answer any different than next. It's a finish installation, next, finish. And then you need to create something called eDeployment Share, which you do by clicking on a new deployment share. You specify a path, you specify a folder share, and you specify a name, and you click next, and you're pretty much done. Now that was the complicated part. Now it's the easy part. Well, you can, of course, just import things to it, like import all the applications, the operating system, the out-of-the-box drivers, packages. But the first thing we want to do is that we're going to create a reference image, the image that is supposed to be installed on all the machines, right? And that's an image that is fully packed with all the applications, it's fully patched, and it's ready to be used. And why do we do that? Well, I do have a customer that says, I don't like reference images. Okay, so why is that? Well, I don't see the benefit. Well, it's going to cut down time. Yeah, I have 10 hours to complete an installation. I don't need to cut down time. And that's true. If you do have 10 hours to deploy an image, then you don't need to do a reference image. Then you can just wait for a very long time. Most companies don't have the 10-hour window. They have a shorter window, like an hour. And in that case, we can't install from the media directly because it's going to take more than 2 hours to install it, including all the patches.
And also, it's quite much nicer to the network to have stuff that are deployed to all the boxes in a compressed WIM file in comparison with just installing them over the network every single time.
Yeah.
140 some updates for Windows 7. How fun is that?
Not. So what we do is that we go to application, we create the folder for, this is the Microsoft application, this is that kind of application. We create folders and then we import the operating system. After a while, you realize that you're doing this over and over again. As I work as a consultant, I do this very often. So instead of doing it very often, I use PowerShell. And this PowerShell script is not very fancy. It's going to create all the folders. And we do that by importing the PowerShell module for MDT. And then we mount it as a drive. And when you mount it as a drive, it's actually becoming a drive. So now we can goof around with it as a drive, which is kind of handy because then we can use things like create the entire folder structure, import the operating system, not whom, but more of.
There's a bit more files.
Yeah.
A bigger file.
It takes a couple of seconds to do this. So you import the operating system, you create the task sequence, and then in the last line you can see that we're setting the properties. So everything you have in MDT is actually possible to configure using PowerShell.
You can actually do more in PowerShell than you can do in the UI,
yeah,
with UI.
So. Anybody wants these scripts later on? Yes. So we're going to put them on the blog so you can download them. And you need to tweak them to fit your deployment share, of course, names and things like that. So let's create and import the operating system task sequence. And I'm going to set the properties so I rename all these items so they are set and ready. Now if I go back, well, I press F5.
You suddenly have content.
And I suddenly have everything I need. The only thing I don't have is applications. I need to install the applications because I need to have some applications in my reference image, like Office. Office is nice. If everybody needs Office, we put Office in the reference image, we patch Office, and when we deploy the machine, Office is already patched and done, right? Anything else? Well, we also need .NET Framework. The reason why I need .NET Framework is because Windows is an application platform for running applications, and applications are written in .NET Framework. And Windows 8.1 doesn't contain .NET Framework 2 and 3. And we do have applications that run on that, so we need to add that too. We also need to add another platform, and that's C++, the runtimes for the C++ applications. So we need to add C++ 2005, 2008, 2010, 2012, and so on and so on. Anything else? Well, if the customer is one of these luxury customers that has something called Microsoft Desktop Optimization Package, MDOP, maybe they have UAV, maybe they have AppV, and maybe we could install that too. And then I have a bunch of custom scripts. And it's pretty easy. You go to install, you do new application with source files, you give it a name.
Next, finish.
And after a while you realize that I've done that before. And it's really boring. Therefore, you can use PowerShell instead. So I do have a PowerShell script, which is, let's change the font. Properties. We also need to change the color since we are geeks. So background needs to be black and screen text needs to be lime. That's a mandatory thing for every geek to run. That makes sense. So I have a script that says import mdtapplications.ps1. It's going to search for every application I have in the apps folder and it's going to put it in my deployment share. So if I go to that folder and I open that up, G raw apps. You can see I have a pretty nice folder structure with all the applications. And if we open
Sumit?
I don't have Sumit on this machine. Do you want me to have Sumit on this machine? I think I can find Sumit. Sumit is one of those applications that I need to install, otherwise Johan hits me on the leg.
The leg, on the head. There is a difference.
Yeah, okay. And it hurts every time.
I may kick you on the leg, but...
Yeah, it's true.
It's less visible.
It is. Ouch. There you go. And it's nice to have this application. So instead of just, you know, importing the applications from a random folder, I'm very organized and structured in this way. So I create a folder structure that looks like this. And if you open up this in that folder, for instance, I just have a Windows a VB script. If you open that folder, it's going to be a PowerShell script together with the source files for IE11, which is nice to have. Here's .NET Framework. It's a VB script together with the source files for that application. So they are organized in this way. And the script actually understands this. So when you run it, it's digging into each folder and figuring out what to do with each application. This saves me approximately 30 minutes every time I build one of these solutions. You can download a script from deploymentbunny.com. And that means if I go to applications, I have all my apps here. And I want to move all the applications by doing a cut and a paste. And this is just for organization. I mean, I don't really need to have it this way, but it's easier for me to do a cut.
And something you will notice in the UI is that it doesn't refresh, because Michael did do a cut. But if you go back to the application, press refresh, it's being moved.
And now I need to go through this application and verify that everything is correct. So I open that app and it says, well, you know, that was a PowerShell script, so it automatically adds all the command lines for running that PowerShell script. And that was a VB script, and therefore it added a VB script correctly. App client is also a VB script. That is called VB script wrappers. We never run the installer natively. I run them within a PowerShell or a VB script, because that gives me logging, and it's easier to troubleshoot, and I can do prerequisites like check if the file exists before you try to install it. Otherwise, it's going to be like, oh, it didn't install IE11. Why? I have no idea. And then you spend 4 hours to figure that out, and you try again, and you try. I don't really have time for that.
So we don't do it for every application. We do it for most. Because, for example, Office has a pretty good logging engine on its own. Now, so we just run the setup there.
Exactly. So we run setup because it has that. But there's one problem with importing Office in MDT, and this is something I see customers struggling with every time. They open this up, they go to Office product, and they let Office, and they go Pro Plus, and they select all, and they do apply. So that's good. That's how you do it, right? So then they open it up again, because it didn't really install, and you realize that, didn't I select something? I think I selected something. So then people do like this, they go Pro Plus, and they do apply, okay, again. And it opens up again, and it's gone. Well, there is a reason for this, and the reason is that you really need to do it in this way. You need to open it up, you need to click on Details, Dependencies, Office Products, select Pro Plus, then do Apply, and if you then do OK, it works. And people go like, what? So the reason is that we're running something called MMC. You heard of that, right? It's very old. It's almost as old as I am. This is basically a web form. It's just you can't see it's a web form, but as a developer, you can ask a developer, you go, yeah, of course, you need to go through every dialog box because it's dialog 0, 1, 2, and 3. You can't go to 4, 3 directly, but you do it that way, and it kind of works. And that's going to change the command line into a correct command line.
So I got a question in the Twitter feed here from Samuel Stevenson, around here somewhere, over there. You said we need to include updates in the reference image.
Yes.
And does that mean that we really are required to build a new one every Patch Tuesday, every month? No, you don't have to, but it makes sense at least to do it at the very least 4 or 5 times a year. But I mean, it doesn't hurt. The process that Michael is showing you is fully automated. And if it's automated, if you run it every once in a while, who cares?
Then it doesn't matter. If you want to have it fully automated, you can download something called an image factory script that actually goes into MDT, gets all the task sequences, builds all the machines in the virtual machine, builds sysprep capture, turns them off, throw them away, and again and again and again, because I have an image factory back home, and we rebuild every image every month. It takes about 22 hours to build all the reference images.
Was that a good question?
That was a good question.
That was a good question.
And I'm not going to sit there and watch Windows being installed. It's not that funny. So everything is done, almost. We need to tweak this a bit. We need to tweak it this way. We need to go to the task sequence, and we need to modify small things. One of the things we might want to change is enabling Windows Update. Otherwise, we don't get any patches. So I think that's a good option. Let's undisable it and undisable it so it's enabled. And then we need to install all the applications. Well, we could install them in install application, and it's automatically going to be installed that way, but that's not really a good choice. I want to install .NET Framework 4.5.2. What's the point of patching .NET Framework 4.5 first to then install the new version and to patch that? So instead, and this only applies to reference images, right? So instead we do this. We take the custom task, do a copy, and yes, you can copy and paste in a sequence. And in that, we do custom tasks pre Windows Update, and in that, we add the applications. So let's start with adding the Windows 8.1 .NET framework. So we have that from the beginning, and it will be patched. We could rename this, but it's fine. And maybe you want to add something else too, like the XPS viewer, like the TIFF iFilter, because people are using that.
It
so
does.
So the question was?
I was just asking if it works through MVC.
Yeah.
Does the install work? Yes, it works. It's smart enough to deep in, go into the SXS folder and grab the content and install it. So the follow-up comment was, I mean, the setup files are really outside, as you know, the image, but MDT is smart enough to deal with it. That's why we're adding in the setup files when we did the import as well.
Which is the important part. So when you do import your operating system, you need to say import the setup files too. If you ignore that, there are no SSX files and it cannot add it. So therefore you need to import the operating system including the setup files. Some people do, and for them it works, and for the other ones it doesn't work. So then we need to add all the other applications. We go to general and we go to install applications. Install single application, and I go to my install and I select all the C++, do a copy, and we paste that, and we go to another install applications, and I take the next one.
And so forth.
And so forth. I'm going to add one other. Let's do, I don't know, Office. Yay, we want to have Office. Now, one of the small issues you have with this, well, I wouldn't say an issue, but let's assume that you install this reference image and it's really great and it contains every patch. It also contains every patch that you don't use. The image will be huge. So, since you're never going to uninstall patches, or you shouldn't at least, not from a reference image, you can add this. So before imaging, we can add just a small step and say this. Let's add a restart the computer, and let's add an application that is called action. And action before cleanup, cleanup before sysprep, and then we do a restart computer again, just to make sure that we don't have any leftovers from that. That small application is actually a VB script, and a VB script you can download from Deployment Bunny if you want to, and that's going to give you something. It's going to scrap out every old patch and reset the base of the operating system. So the WIM file will be somewhere around 500 to 1 gig smaller, which is pretty much for a WIM file that is compressed from the beginning. So the image will be really small. Now, the operations that we are running in this script is native DSIM commands together with cleanup manager. It's just command line based, so you don't need to do it manually. And I strongly recommend you to do that because that's going to lower burden on your infrastructure and it's going to make it faster.
And this works out of the box for Windows 8.1, but if you're still deploying Windows 7 image and want to have the same cleanup operation, you simply need to download a hotfix for Windows 7 to get that function or feature in it. But you use the same script that you download from Mike's blog.
Yeah, so the only thing you need to do is put a package in the packages folder to get it updated for Windows 7 and for Windows Server 2000. 8R2.
Yep.
So that is almost everything. There is one small thing you might want to do. The capturing process that we have is using ImageX. And when we do a capture of an image that is running Windows 8.1, ImageX spends 15 minutes doing absolutely nothing before it starts doing a capture. If you like that, being to wait for nothing at all, then it's fine. If you don't want to do that, you can download a script from my blog that replaces ImageX with DSIM instead. So we're doing a DSIM capture instead. Just search for the get rid of all this stuff before, clean up the image before you do a sysprep. So that's pretty much it, right?
Yep.
The next step will be to create a boot image, and then we create a virtual machine, and then we boot machine up. Let's find a virtual machine. Do we have someone around here? Maybe we can do, I don't know, PC number 6. And let's apply that. And connect to that machine. We also need to have the boot image, which I have here. MDT01, browse, apps, and I think I saved a copy here somewhere. Yes, I did. Copy. Let's put it there. It's a huge ISO. And then we boot on that ISO. So we never do a Pixie boot on the reference image. There's no point of doing that. We also create all the reference images using virtual machines, never ever physical machines. Well, it works for me, yeah. But now I have a problem. Yes, I know. How do you fix that? Well, you stop using a physical machine to do a reference image, basically.
We don't care if you use VMware or Hyper-V or any of the other working vendors, but use a VM for the reference image. It simply gives you the best possible image you can have, and I guarantee you that if you don't have issues with it, it's not related to hardware, it's something else. It's software that this one is using.
And it's on the right network. Yes, it is. And that should be good to go. And then we need to fill out the blanks. And I modified the custom settings.ini, and I modified bootstrap.ini, so I don't need to answer any questions. We're going to publish those files as well, so you can just copy them. And that means that basically it asks for one thing, the task sequence. Can you automate that too? Yes, I can.
I got another question coming in. Will the same setup work with Windows Server, for example, to create a remote desktop server? Absolutely, yes. This is just, MDT supports everything from Windows 7 up to 8.1 and also the current and 2008 R2 and upwards servers. So you can absolutely do servers as well.
Yeah, I work for a data center. We create all the reference images for every environment using MDT. Then we deploy them using Configuration Manager, Virtual Machine Manager, USB sticks, Windows Deployment Services, and we throw images at people too. So we use one tool to create all the reference images. So this is the tricky question. And then you do next. And then you do something else.
For about an hour and a half.
And we're not going to wait for that.
The thing is, it installs Windows, installs the apps, runs the updates, runs sysprep. No, does the cleanup, runs sysprep, and then stores the WIM file on the server.
So one question that pops up from time to time is, we need virtual disks. We need virtual hard disk for our... So should I use the option in MDT to create virtual disks? No, you should not. You should always create a WIM file, and then you use one of those scripts out there that converts a WIM file into a VHDX file. Then you are sure that it's exact same installation, otherwise it will be slightly different.
All right, so once we have the reference image, it's time to put that into production. Meaning, typical, you start with bare metal deployments. Almost every company does this one way or another. But this is just assuming there are no data on the machine, we just wanted to have a clean install. What are you doing? Of the reference image. to a bare metal machine. We want to have automation the way we like it. Some customers, they like to have it fully automated, and then we simply configure MBT to be fully automated. The name Light Touch is just a marketing term, and it's just a default behavior, because if you don't configure anything in MBT, you will be prompted for like 10 different things when you start the setup. But you control that by modifying the init file. And then, of course, we assign settings, et cetera, during deployment. But number one
coming up.
Ah, five then.
Number five coming up.
That looks like mine. So here I have a separate deployment share. Technically, it's not needed, but it really helps to try to separate your build labs or reference image together with production. Because in production, for example, you will have settings like you want the machine to join the domain and specific OU, and you want to have specific settings for USNT and whatnot. But you also have different applications that you use in production. But what you do is that you do the same thing here. You add in the various applications you want to deploy. You add in the operating system, and this time you simply import the reference image that Michael created. And then you create your production sequences, either Windows 8 or Windows 7 or whatever you are deploying. And then you're done.
Almost.
Right-click, deployment share update. You take that boot image that is being the result. You add that to Windows Deployment Services, so that you can use it for Pixi, which is much more fun than to run around with a CD or USB stick that needs to be updated every single time. So the only thing I do in Windows Deployment Services is actually adding in the MDT boot image from my production share. So if I go to the folder structure here, this is what I imported into Windows Deployment Services, that WIM file right there that I got when I updated my deployment share. So Windows Deployment Services is not used for anything but starting the deployment over the network. So I'm going to go to a client here and go to Clean Snapshot, and I'm going to start a Pixi boot on this one.
And that is a generation 2, which means it's running UEFI, right?
Yeah. So count the number of seconds here. 2, 3, 4.5 seconds to Pixi boot over the network, a boot image. How many of you are Pixi booting in your own network? How many of you that are raising your hand right now are doing it faster than 5 seconds?
It's strange.
On 5 seconds? How long does it typically take? Half a minute, minute maybe, 2 minutes? It depends. So why is it that my deployment was Pixi booting that fast? I have solid state drives, yeah, but it's mainly two things. The main reason I cheated a lot. First, I was, as Michael said, creating or booting a generation 2 VM. And most UEFI-based machines are much, much faster in Pixi booting. I said most, I don't say all, because some are actually slower. But most are really fast in Pixi booting. And I had optimized my Pixi server for this scenario, which means that on my deployment server, about the only configuration I actually do on this one, in the TFTP tab, I have bumped up the block size. Because most modern hardware, including the Hyper-V VMs, will happily accept this.
And when you say modern hardware, we talk about laptops and desktop that is not older than like 5 years. So if you have really old things like, you know, runs on coal and gas and steam and things, then it doesn't work. But if you have anything newer than that, it most likely works. And so I was working for a customer in Florida, and they had an average boot time every time they're supposed to deploy a machine on 30 minutes. Not kidding you. They were sitting and watching the screen for 30 minutes before they can select anything at all. Yeah, I know, but they were kind of bored of it. So it's like, oh, I'm going to fire up 4 machines and then we take lunch, okay?
I had an office that
took 4 hours. 4 hours? That's a new record, right?
That's
there.
That's a new record.
They were deployed from New York to somewhere in Canada.
Okay.
It was not really a question, but...
But it was a really good record.
For that pain, I think he deserves
yes,
a book.
He does. You really deserve a book for that. There you go, sir.
He's recognized. Thank you.
Anyway, the other setting is this one. It's default now in 2012, but it really also actually speeds up the Pixabit some bit. But what is it that we have in production deployment that we don't have to worry about when we create reference images? There is one distinct... No.
Okay.
Drivers, right? We need to add drivers. And MBT actually supports three different ways of assigning drivers. We don't like the default one. The default one is plug-and-play AD detection. We don't use that. It's simply... It may work. It doesn't always work. So what we try to do or try to convince people to do is use a method that is named total control. And we have two types of drivers that we need to worry about. We have drivers for our boot images. And by default, when you import a driver into MDT, and it's a network driver or a storage driver, MDT will add that to the boot image. Even if it's a wireless driver, it will actually add that to the boot image. So by default, if you start to import drivers for various models that you have, you end up with a very bloated boot image. So what I recommend that you do is to create a folder, for example, a folder for WinP 64-bit, and you only import the drivers that you need for the boot image in that folder. And then to make sure the workbench uses that, you create a selection profile down here. It's a filter, so I have created a filter for that specific folder and named it WinP. And then on my deployment share properties, on the WinP tab, on the correct architecture, on drivers and patches, I will now configure it to use 64. And since I only imported the drivers that actually needed, I can select, all right, we're good to go. So this way, I'm filtering and saying only drivers in that folder goes into my boot image when I update my deployment share. Then we have the drivers for the operating system. These are being organized into folders here. Has nothing to do on how they are stored in the file system in the back end, but at least I recommend doing it on a per model basis. So for example, here I have a Latitude from Dell and I have an EliteBook from HP, and for the EliteBook, I have imported the EliteBook drivers into that folder, meaning right-clicked, import, specify the folder where I had the extracted drivers, and life is good. Now, to get MDT to work or use this folder structure, I only need to do two things in my sequences. So I open the sequence, one of them, go to the pre-install action or phase, and I'm adding a property named driver group. And as you can see here, I'm setting the value to Windows 8, that's my folder name, and then percent make and percent model. Because when you deploy a machine, MDT learns about the vendor and the model and replaces that with the real names. So as long as your folders in the workbench are named for what the model is really named, it will find those drivers and inject them. The second thing that you need to do is to change the configuration of the inject drivers action. This is the default. This means enable plug and play. This one is forget about plug and play. Do as you're told. Take the drivers that they have in the matching model, inject them locally into the driver store.
There are so many reasons why we don't use plug and play, but I'm going to give you two. One is that you call it two-tier driver issue. Two-tier drivers is pretty common, and they have a plug and play ID for the bus. Behind the bus, you have other plug and play IDs for each component. The Windows P scans only the bus because it doesn't load the drivers, it doesn't see the real driver behind it. So it's going to download a bus driver for that component, which means it's going to give you enough to see that you're missing the drivers. Are there any two tray drivers? Yes, there are. Audio adapters, network adapters, graphic adapters, basically everything that is a bit strange does have that. That's number one. Number two, in the ViaMonster company, we do have Dells and HPs or Lenovos. We have multiple vendors. And one of the problems with multiple vendors is that the vendors are buying stuff from other vendors, like network adapters and graphic adapters, right? And they tend to have the same plug-and-play ID, but they don't have the same driver. So now you are here with an HP that kind of is, you know, doesn't work that well. And you have a Dell driver in the HP. And now you call HP and say, hey, the graphic adapter doesn't work. Your Dell driver is bad. And that's really not easy to fix. Therefore, we do what we are supposed to do. We treat Windows like a little kid. We don't ask them what they would like to have for dinner. We serve them dinner and say, today it's meatballs. And then you serve them that and they go like, oh, great. But if you have two kids and you ask them for what would you like to have for dinner tonight, that's something you do once as a parent and you never do it again.
Anyway, back to...
Question, yes.
You can absolutely use the same technology, but the MDT solution does not work out of the box with like VMM and those solutions. You can connect them together, and Michael actually did a session, was it 2 years ago?
Yeah.
It's on Channel 9, where he does the integration between Light Touch and VMM. So you can absolutely steal some of that if you're interested. You can still do offline servicing, obviously. You can have an unattend file that looks in a specific folder for drivers, and they are being staged and injected. So it's possible. Now, if I go back to my deployment here, my running machine, I need to log on with a password. I think that makes sense for production deployments that require a password. And something you can also do, whether we didn't show you, but you can actually limit the number of sequences shown here depending on who logs in, for example. There are settings in the rules that allow you to do that. But I'm going to select my Windows 8 image here and click Next and give it a name, Mike's PC 86, 56. That's a name.
Okay.
And I start my deployment. Now, if I go back to my server, I have enabled monitoring, so on my production deployment chair, here, I went into properties, I went into monitoring, and enabled monitoring. When you do that, it creates a small database, a compact C database, SQL, and a web service to drive that. And once I've done that, I will now see in real time my running deployments. If I have many, of course, I get multiple lines. But now, if I double-click that, I get more details about that running deployment. And if I have Dart added to my boot image, I can actually remote into it as well. So now I'm still in WinP, but from the machine I'm using to administer MDT, and that could be your box. It doesn't have to be the server. You can now remote into each and every machine that you deploy. It's only available in the WinP phase. But it's so useful, especially if you have a remote office and you're troubleshooting an application, because trying to find someone on the phone to get the F8 key for a command prompt and get the log files to you and whatnot, it's just a royal pain.
I guess you heard the conversation. Is that there is something wrong, and you ask them what? Well, there was an error. Okay, that's good. What kind of error? I don't know. I rebooted the machine. Great, then I know what to search for. It's really hard.
So, again, it does require an MDOP because Dart is included in MDOP, and MDOP, as you know, is a separate license on top of software assurance. So there is a cost connected to it, but I think it's so worth it. Now, to get this to work, obviously, you need to install a Dart on your machine where you have this console. And once you've done that, and once you copy the Dart cab files to the deployment share, then when you go into properties and go to WinPE, go to features, the correct architecture, you have this extra option that you don't have otherwise. And this one is required to get that remote in capability. The cool thing about this monitoring is that, I mean, this is real-time monitoring. And if I open up a PowerShell prompt here and create some more deployments, because we can do everything in PowerShell. PowerShell is king. So create events. So now I have 11 deployments, 10 that completed successfully. Yes? The scale this goes to, basically thousands and thousands, because the machines are only staying here 3 days in this database by default, and then they're just being wiped away. This is just a very lightweight. It's only a few megabytes going in from every machine. I mean, the fields that you have in the database table are the 6 or 7 you see here. So. We have done hundreds of simultaneous deployments without issues. Been working with universities that deploy these big open landscapes with computers. Have seen no issues in performance for this. The cool thing about this is you can view this information in many ways. For example, you can review that same deployment directly in PowerShell. Same information, it's just a web service. Or you can open up Excel, if you like Excel.
Anybody likes Excel?
Yeah, I like Excel fine.
Yeah, it's a cool app, right?
And you can just connect to an OData feed in Excel as well, if I selected the right one.
It's waiting for something really important.
I guess. Let me select that one. It's name, blank workbook, data, external sources, OData feed, paste in, next. Here we go, select, finish. Thank you. So now I have my monitoring information in Excel, and now you can do coloring, green for good, red for errors. You can do pie charts, you can do whatever thing you like in Excel in terms of fancy graphics. You can also use a PowerShell script that Michael put together for their own production environment that just takes the same information, just dumps it out to a regular web page, allowing you to see there. This is their training facility in Stockholm,
yeah.
Their local data center there, all the machines are being deployed. But the same type of information just being used in different scenarios, which is really, really cool, I think. So many of you, when you come home, you try this out. And it works beautifully, because it does, for about 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. Then your deployment server dies, completely just dies. And you wonder, why? And that is because this web service by default is, and it won't happen to all of you. It will only happen to some of you. So if you're lucky, it doesn't break your server. But if you want to make sure it doesn't break the server, you need to remember this. There is a config file for every web service, or most web services, and the MDT one is in the monitor folder. So if I open up that configuration file in Notepad, you can see that by default, it is actually logging to this file. Whoops, I did not mean to do that. This file here. But only if the temp folder exists And it's not there by default in Windows, but guess what? Admins tend to create that folder for stuff they used temporarily. And when you do this, and if you have that folder, it starts to log, and my record so far is 5 gig per day into that log file. You should do the math here.
Is it C drive?
That's the C drive, yeah. So you take the amount of free space you have on your deployment server, you divide it by 5, and that will give you the number of days before it dies. So what I recommend, well, obviously you can delete this. You can simply wipe away the diagnostic section if you like, but you can also change the event information to not log just everything, but just when things go wrong, like error or warning. And please put it somewhere else where it's not likely to break the server. So if you want the monitoring or the logging for troubleshooting, sure, but yeah. It's challenging.
And one thing that you didn't mention, but also happens when you enable monitoring, it also enables the monitoring to the event log. So every machine that is now deployed pops up in the event log. So if you do have an event log collector, you can use that to see for every machine that you have been deployed, issues, errors, the time it took, things like that. So it's going to be in the event log too.
Yeah, you will see starting deployment of PC number 856, completed successfully or completed incorrectly, whatever. So once we have the base deployment up and running, obviously we want to start assign settings. And for example, we want to do computer names. And computer names we can do a few different ways. In my example, in my demo, I prompted for a computer name. That's one way you're doing that. You type it in at deployment time. But you can also have the system generate the computer name, and Michael is going to show you that in a minute. But you can also pre-stage.
But what is the issue, actually, when typing the computer name? I mean, you type in the computer name. That's not that hard, right?
It's not automated.
Is there any chance you type in the incorrect computer name?
Never
like
happens.
Like a computer name that is already in use. It's fun. Then you have two computers with the same name, and the last one will actually be the one that is joined to domain. The other one just stops working. I have customer deploying servers and type in the wrong name, like DC01. Kind of bad.
It's kind of bad. So what you can do in MDT, you can install an optional free SQL Express database. And then you can, from the database node, you can create the database. It's just 10 tables, and they're just used for deployment information. And if you want, you can now start to pre-state your machines in here. So you can either do a right-click and a new, and you type in the information about the machine, you pick one identifier out of 4, and then once you have that identifier, it could be a serial number, you can start to fill in information about that machine. For example, computer name and application it should have and whatnot. But you can also do this for PowerShell, obviously. So if you search, or if you go to Michael Niehaus' blog, he used to be the lead developer of MDT before they was merged with the config manager team last year. Here, somewhere, import computers, maybe.
Could be that.
Yeah. So here I have a text file with computers. Just the MAC address and the name they're supposed to have. And I just run the import script and wait, and I go back here, and now I have a crash in the console. It's an MMC, it crashes every once in a while, but the thing is, it doesn't break anything, it just I have to reopen it again, so it's not that big deal, really. So now I have my machines there, and now if I would have deployed these machines with that name or that MAC address, they would have gotten those. So it's quite nice. But we mentioned before there is a powerful rules engine.
Mm-hmm.
So we can use it to generate stuff. So
we can. Let's flip over to number one. So yes, we can use the custom settings.ini to generate different names or computers. So here's a good example of one. This is a customer that asked me for something. I don't really like this, But as a consultant, it doesn't really matter what I like or not like. Well, you go to the customer and they say, this is the way, and you go, okay. And then you do that. But these customers really want to have the different name based on location, where the machine is, together with the laptop or desktop type, together with a part of the serial number. I like the part of the serial number because that is an identity that exists inside the computer. And basing the name on something that is in the computer makes it fully automated. Having a translation is kind of pointless. I don't work for Microsoft, but I do have friends working at Microsoft, and I ask them for, what's the naming convention for computers you have? Oh, it's easy. It needs to be less than 15 characters, and it can't be used. That's NetBIOS, right? Yeah, that's the naming convention we have. Who cares what the computer has for a name? Well, the support team does. Okay, so let's fight that question too. The support team needs to know the computer name because of what? Well, the user can call in and say, I have a problem with the computer. Okay? So then it's the user that asks for support. Yes, not the computer, no. So what do you need to know the computer name? Oh, we need to look it up. We need to, you know, connect to that machine. So you don't have Active Directory, do you? You don't have that, right? You just randomly answer questions on, you know, well, these guys can't open the Active Directory users to computers. So you are in help desk and you can't open, okay. Anyhow, this is what he asked for. So we can build this based on default gateway, by VM type, by laptop type, by desktop type, which is sections in custom-settings.ini. We added properties called name by type, name by location, and we're going to build the name based on that type, location, and we're going to use the leftmost eight leftmost characters in the serial number. Based on the default gateway, and I just need to check the default gateway over here, and what I have is...
You could have opened another command prompt, you know that.
Yeah, but I like the backspace, it's so cool.
Of course.
Of course. In this case, it's 10.8.01. Let's change that to 10.8.1. So if we do happen to be on that network, we're going to go to Redmond. If that is the name, we're going to set the name location to RD. If it's a laptop, it's going to be laptop true. That means it's going to go to laptop true and set the name by type to WLT. And then it's going to build the name. So let's save that. And let's run that. And that setting is called settings based on computer type and location.
The cool thing about the MDT is these settings you can simulate by just running the gather script like Michael is doing right now. And that will give you a result in a log file. Where you actually can see directly the deployments or the deployment settings that would happen if you would deploy this machine.
I'm not going to do that.
Control.
Yeah, I know. That's the name. So now I can verify it. And the only thing I do is I run what's called CTI gather dash inified and point to the custom settings all inified that I'm goofing around with. So I can test it and I can try it and I can try it in different scenarios. I can do literally hundreds of tests in just a couple of minutes to figure out if this is the naming standard the customer actually wants. Yes, if that's okay, let's run it. If you want to download these sample files, you go to deploymentbunny.com, you search for custom-settings.ini. About 500 other people do it every day to download these files. So for some reason, which I can't figure out. So that was naming, right?
Yep. What about that wizard I was showing you? Can we customize that if we want to? I mean, I selected a sequence, I selected a computer name. Could that be modified?
Of course it can.
It's just an HTA and an XML file, or a bunch of XML files, actually. But you could.
You could. So let's open that up and go to MDT01 and there is something you can download to modify that. It's going to be in stuff.
Of course. Where you have stuff.
There's something called MDT Wizard Studio. You can download that.
Yes. On CodePlex.
On CodePlex. There's actually two versions, old and new. This is the new one, written by Mike Koster. It's not perfect, but it works, kind of. And now, you can do the following things. Like, you can go like open, and then you can find the file called deploy-wiz definition ENU and open that. And that is going to give you the entire wizard. So now you can create your own pages and add and remove and use variables. And, you know, maybe you should ask for like the asset tag or maybe the department, or you can, it's HTML, so it's not really that complicated to get it with XML.
Well, there was another requirement as well in our specification, and that was to send an email when deployment were done.
That's true. How do you do that? Well, to be able to send an email, you need to have an email server. That's number one. It's called SMTP4Dev. It's one of those really lovely email servers. It answers everything, so it always works.
You can use Exchange as well. This is just good for testing. It's just a very lightweight mail server that you just launch, and it will answer, accept emails.
The only thing you need to do is open port 25. Okay, so fair enough. It has options, but I never used it. So that's the email server, right? And what we do need to have more is the ability to...
That's the Outlook server, yeah.
Yeah. You need to have the ability to... Let's go to production and go to task sequences and to dev and to find something called test. This is a test task sequence. It does the following things. It sets the finish action to none. So if I do have a finish action of reboot, it doesn't reboot the server I'm goofing around with. Thank you. It does a gather, just so I can verify that all the data that is being gathered from custom-settings.ini gets in here. It runs a dummy PowerShell script, which is kind of pointless. The only reason I run that is to make sure that all the PowerShell commandlets are copying down to the client if I want to do other things. In this case, it's actually not needed. And then I run something called ctisendmail.ps1. So that is a PowerShell script that grabs the data from custom-settings.ini together with the email address and things like that. It also grabs the BDD log file and creates an email using the .NET framework component in PowerShell and sends it to the server. And when I ask customers if they want to have this, they go like, yeah. Well, even if you have Configuration Manager, yeah. Okay, why? Because in, you know, with the big systems, you have all this monitoring. Yeah, but it's so easy to just get an email. You go to the desktop, you redeploy the machine, and you get an email that says it's done. Huh, it means I don't need to be in the office at 4 a.m. in the morning to fix the computer because it's done. I just know that. You can download the script if you want to do that, so that's fine. And of course, you want to verify it works. So here's how you verify it works. You run the LightTouch wizard. And then you pick the test task sequence, which I am about to do.
I'm answering tweets over here.
Ah, so you're working and I'm not, right? Okay, so here's the tricky part. I needed to select the test. Let's do the test and begin. So it's doing the gather step, which is kind of nice. It runs the demo, and then I had a pause. This is just a very simple light touch. It's a VB script with one command. It says message box OK. So I just put that in because then I can stop the sequence and see that I'm in the right location. I can check the log files, things like that. And then we hit the K. And then it runs the email. And then I press OK. And the sequence is kind of done. So if that worked, crossing your fingers?
No.
You're not? Well, obviously it worked. So here's the mail. I can't open that, but I can do an inspect of it, or a view, inspect, obviously. So here's the mail, and it has something, the notification, yada, yada, something, and here's the BDD log file, and if you go to body, you're going to be able to see that too. It's very nice, it's very simple. Anybody want to have the send an email when the deployment is done? Nobody? A few of you? That's cool.
All right. There are a few more scenarios that you are very likely to be interested of using. And for the spec we had in the beginning was that we would need to support both bare metal deployments, but also refresh and replace. Most companies, they use a mix of all these three types of scenarios, but the refresh is really powerful when you have a machine that is just, it's not really broken, it's just something in the software is not okay. So you can just, instead of troubleshooting it for 2 hours, you can just push an image to it or refresh it from starting the Lighthead script locally. And for the replay scenario, which I think many of you are using, where you have an old box that is supposed to go out the window and the user is going to get the new machine, those two scenarios have something in common, and that is user state migration tool. Included by default in MDT, you actually have to disable it to not get it. It will take care of finding the data and settings on the existing operating system and make sure to restore them for both these scenarios. So if I open up, go back to my number five, please. Here I have a Windows 7 box. And that was not a Windows 7 box.
Yeah.
Need to be able to type for that to work. So I will log in as Johan on this Windows 7 box. And another user is currently logged in. Could it be my admin account? I was testing some stuff before. Let's see. Yeah, I was. Interesting. Maybe you can sing a song in the meantime.
Well, that will definitely make people want to walk out of here immediately, so we're not going to do that.
Well, while we're waiting for that friend to switch my user accounts here, USMT is using templates to control what's being backed up. And by default, there are two visible templates in the USMT folder. But the odd thing about the USMT part, I think, is that when MDT imports those files into your deployment share, and it does that by default, they're being named USMT 5. It's not USMT 5 anymore. It's USMT 6.3. So if you go into that folder and look at the various commands, you will actually see it is indeed the correct version. So don't worry, it is the right version. It's just named, the folder is named incorrectly. And this is also where you see the default templates, MIG user and MIG app, for example, that are being used. You can create your own templates, and in fact, MDT also have a script that generates a template. It will detect every software that you have installed that have an extension registered. For example, if you install Word, it will register .docx. If you install Adobe PDF, Adobe Reader, it will register PDF. And MDT is smart enough to look for those file types that are registered, so it will actually scan the entire drive for those file types and make sure they're being backed up as well, in addition to what you specify in the templates.
Mean that in reality, when we have small and medium customers, they ask for, you know, how much configuration do we need to spend on USMT? Done. Nothing. It's going to work.
So this is a machine, a background I put in there for your sake. Do you recognize this?
It's Stockholm, right?
It's Stockholm where you live. I live in a different city in Sweden. But this is Stockholm in the wintertime. And this is my profile. And not only I have a custom background image, I also have some documents here on my desktop, symbolizing that I have some settings or data that I really would like to be there after refreshing a machine. So I'm going to log out now, and I'll log in as an administrator again, because you need to be an admin when you run LightTouch deployments in MDT. And I'm not an admin, so maybe I should promote myself to it. Administrator. So now I can click off, that's the config manager agent, get away. have a mixed environment. I'm just running the LightTouch script, LightTouch VBS script. And I will select the sequence. For example, my Windows 8 sequence. And of course, this can be automated as well. And just to show you what's going on in the back end, I'm going to open up Process Explorer from SysInternals and leave it running for a while. So I will select my sequence and the name of the computer. And now it's going to do a few things. It will start the backup. It will run really shortly here. It starts using scan state now. So shortly, I should see scan state popping up somewhere here. Here we have scan state running. If I go properties, I can actually now see the exact command lines it was using when running. That's something I can also get from the log files, obviously. But this is useful when you want to troubleshoot stuff or test templates for backup. You can just run this over and over again in a command prompt until you nail it. But if I go back to my file system now, you can actually see it's using hard links to store data, the backup, in the state store folder. So I have usempty, and shortly when the scan state progress is kicking in, I will start to see files in here. But they are not really here, they're just links. Because what will happen later is that MDT will reboot into WinPE and it will wipe the drive, but not this backup folder or these links. And then it will apply a new image, either the same operating system or Windows 8.1 or whatever, and restore the backup in the end. So everything is automated for me. So now you can see if I go into the file system here, actually I have $C. If I go to users and go to my Johan profile, go to desktop, this is where I have my documents. If I go to my pictures, this is where I have my Stockholm winter image. And everything from here is automated, which is pretty cool. So the other scenario I wanted to mention at least is the replay scenario, which is where you have the old machine where you run the backup on. But to do that in MDT, you need a separate sequence that does a backup-only job. So if I go back to my demo environment here, this one, here. What you need to do in MDT is to create, when you create a new sequence, you simply specify another template. And that's called replace template or replace sequence. I have one here named other something. Here we go, backup only. And you can see it's a short sequence that runs backup only. So this is the one you run on the old machine. And then you do a bare metal deployment on the new machine. And either you have in the rules defined what backup to restore, or you simply prompt for what backup to restore on the new machine. Because if you don't tell MDT, it really cannot know. So we have a few things left, three things actually. One, these are books we authored. Good information around deployment. Our blogs is where you find all the sample files and scripts. Remember to fill in the evaluation and, as always, be honest but gentle. And the final third thing is thank you for coming here today.
Thank you.